Welcome to BioEpic, the podcast that delves into people's lives and illuminates the impact that they've made on our world. My name is Katie Williams and I'm a Service Delivery Manager at RBKC Libraries. In today's episode, we focus on Kay Summersby, a woman who had a remarkable insight into the Second World War and was at the side of one of the most famous men in history. I'm delighted to be joined by the actress Laura Rogers, who actually played the role of Kay Summersby in the West End theatrical production Pressure, David Haig's enthralling account of the D-Day landings and Operation Overlord. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Katie. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the podcast. I will do a mini confession at this point, which will make us giggle. We did record this, well, I thought we recorded this a few weeks ago, and I went back to my Zoom account and it hadn't actually saved at all. And apparently I'm not alone in this. Other famous podcasters like Adam Buxton and other people do this all the time. So I don't feel that bad, but I really feel awfully apologetic, Laura. So thank you so much for coming back on.
Not at all.
So obviously, we'll kick off with a very potted history on Kay, an introduction into her life. So Kay was actually Kathleen Summersby. Her maiden name was McCarthy Morogue. I hope I've spelled that, enunciated that correctly. Kay was born on an island just off the coast of Cork in 1908. Kay came from a military background. Her father served in the army and he reached the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. After leaving Ireland as soon as she possibly could, she moved to London. She became a fashion model with a top Parisian haute-couture agency, the House of Worth, and by 1936 had married Gordon Summersby. Sadly, the marriage didn't last, and by the start of World War II, she was driving ambulances around a very blitz London. And while serving for the British Women's Auxiliary Corps, she found herself one day driving a certain General Dwight Eisenhower around London. This was to be a real turning point for Kay, who was to serve the great man until the end of the war, and she duly moved to the United States. She had a career subsequently in designing theatrical productions and kept a fairly quiet life. Kay died in New York in 1975, at the age of 66. So the book that forms the main discussion of the podcast today, which comes from our Biography Store collection, was published by Kay Summersby in 1948 and is entitled Eisenhower Was My Boss. And it instantly became a bestseller. So Laura, I have to say, this book is an extraordinary account and thrillingly told. We will get onto the book shortly. Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask about your own origin story with Kay Summersby.
So, it was in 2014. I had a call from my agent to say that I was being sent a script to have a look at because David Haig had written a play called Pressure and they wanted to see me for the role of Kay Summersby. Now, I'd never heard of Kay Summersby at all. I got the script and I started reading it and the story was just so exciting and engaging. And then, of course, there was the central female character of Kay Summersby, who was actually the only female character in the play. And I hadn't appreciated at the time that she was a real life person. I thought perhaps she'd just been created for the play itself. I started to research her and lo and behold, yes, there was this wonderful, wonderful woman, Kay Summersby, who used to drive Eisenhower around. And I started to look further and further into her and became sort of a big fan of hers. She was indeed the most inspirational woman and did reflect many of the women who had, you know, that a job to do, a big job to do during the war. And like many of the other women during the war were forgotten about or their stories were never told. And so as soon as I read the play and started reading more about her, I thought, I so want to get this job. It's not often that a character leaps out at you like that, and it makes you feel like you really want to have a go at representing her. So I was really, really fortunate when I did get the job, because she's definitely a character that has stayed with me. And I felt only disappointed that I was never able to meet her in real life, really.
Yeah. She's, I mean, her character leaps out from the book itself, doesn't it? It's a massive adventure story of a book. I mean, obviously, Kay starts by travelling around the UK with Ike. I think Ike is Eisenhower's nickname. She ends up in North Africa, Middle East. Her ship is bombed. She gets jaundiced. She goes through a lot of deprivation. But there is this spirit in there. I mean, would you agree that Kay had this devil-may-care, I'm just going to go for it, joie de vivre?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think obviously there was something, I mean, I read up about the war. We watch films about the war. We read stories. We look at documentaries. And it feels like it would have been the most terrifying experience. And obviously it was. But as well as that, there must have been this huge sense of coming together and working together and building on something together, and the adrenaline that also must have given. I mean, these women and women like Kay, she didn't appear to be afraid of anything. She just got stuck in there, and I feel like it was the first time that she felt that she had a purpose, and she was incredibly important. I mean, there was nothing she couldn't do. She could drive in blackouts. She could fix a car. She kept all the men calm. She managed everything. She was Eisenhower's right-hand man, really. And I think that she also went about it with a sort of, she got on really well with the men. She got on really well with the women. She wasn't just a sort of man's woman or a woman's woman. She was a feminine, free-spirited woman, but very practical. She had a wicked personality by all accounts. She had a twinkle in her eye. She could charm people, but she had a sort of mischievousness as well about her. And I think she just sort of got on with it. She didn't ever, you know, let any of her woes get her down, and she didn't think inwardly. She thought outwardly about what she could do to help the cause, which I think is a very admirable thing to do. And I mean, we're seeing it amongst the NHS at the moment, how they're sitting on the front line, standing on the front line, going in and working in this pandemic and putting everybody before themselves. And that's what the likes of Kay Summersby would have done during the war. There wasn't really time to feel anxious about it. You just got on with it.
Yeah, that thought hadn't occurred to me before. So thanks for sharing that, particularly, you know, her struggles and her impact that she made. It's really the book that she's written is a very unique perspective of not only the triumphs, but the disasters endured by Allied forces in World War II. And, you know, there was so much that went on, and it was interesting to read the operational stuff behind it, because, you know, oh, this is a woman that's talking about operations and giving us this actually quite good detail about the war. I mean, obviously, we've talked a bit about the impact that she made, but It was quite incredible. I mean, you know, we could talk a bit about Eisenhower, because I think she definitely made an impact on him.
Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, there are many accounts on it. Obviously, this book here, that doesn't go into her personal love for Eisenhower, really. But there are other stories and that have been written, and there are... Well, rumours, are they rumours, who knows, about how close her and Eisenhower were. And I think from what I've read about everything, and from the people I've spoken to, people that knew her, that still alive today that actually came to see the show, and I had coffee with them after. You know, a friend of hers said how there was no doubt about it that they were in love, or they had a huge affection for each other. It wasn't necessarily that sort of sexual desire, but it was a huge admiration and almost like the meeting of souls, to sound a bit corny. But I think they really got each other. They knew how the other one ticked. She was the only person that kept him on a sort of even keel, stabilized his emotions so that he could make the decisions, the massive decisions that he had to make in order for him to go out and fight the war. It was documented that Winston Churchill used to love having her around because he knew how she had this calming influence over Eisenhower. And everyone could see this affection between them. They had a cottage together. They had a dog together. It was also said that Eisenhower actually wanted to divorce his wife in order to get married to Kay, but of course the people and, you know, the powers that be just said that absolutely could not happen. This was a man who was a general and later on became the president, so it was just not the done thing. But on the whole, nobody talked about it. All the men, they just kept it all quiet. They kept the secret because they knew that Ike functioned a lot better with her by his side than without her. So it wasn't a little gossipy rumor that people used to talk about it. You know, it was something that it was important. It was a genuine love story. And whether it was consummated or not, nobody knows. It was a very different era, and there were more important things that you know were being that had to be done at the time. But I think that she certainly, I think for her, Eisenhower was probably the love of her life, and I don't think she really knew what to do with herself when the war ended.
Yeah, it's very it's almost like a blank page after she moves to the United States. It's not long after the World War II that she moves, and apart from, you know, you get the glimpse of she's been a costume or theatrical designer, you don't really see that much. And it's quite odd how somebody that's made such an impact on this great war hero and, you know, gave him the impetus to do his job properly. And it's a very odd situation. And it's almost like her story or her post World War experience was expunged from history. It's utterly bizarre. And if you look at the book as well, one thing which struck me was odd, Eisenhower never said that he was very political. He was always very much in the, you know, in the thick and the fold of war, being with his men. He didn't feel that he was a political animal. Didn't want to go back to Washington, did he? He didn't want to go back to Washington and you know, become involved in the offices there. He wanted to actually be on the field. So that was it. Quite interesting that Kay kind of lays out his personality, what he was like and what he was to become as a president. But it's very startling how he is, you know, I'm not this political animal, and yet he ends up in the White House.
Yeah. I think the overriding thing, I think one of the things she must have fallen in love with was his how human he was and how fair. And I think that she obviously just saw this huge kindness in the man. And I think that his morals, he obviously was a man of great moral standing because he was already married and did respect his wife. He was not in a position to leave all that because of his love for somebody else, because of his love for Kay. It's not the these weren't the times that we live in today where, you know, presidents can sort of do what they like and get away with it. Like, he actually had a huge, like a real stance on what was good, what was right. Mm-hmm. And he would probably put other people before himself and put his country before himself. And yeah, it's very sad, I feel, because you want, as a love story, you want it to work out, but actually this was reality. It wasn't just made up, it wasn't just a story. And they would have gone through such huge things together that nobody else would have been able to understand during this war. And yet, as soon as it ended, Kay must have felt totally redundant, because after having so much to do, responsibility, you know, helping win the war, really, I believe that she definitely played a big part in that. Go from that to having to go back to a sort of a life of, well, and she would have thought a life of really not much. I mean,
yeah,
she didn't have any children. Her fiance died in the First World War. Then obviously this falling in love with Eisenhower, and then suddenly the war ending, and all of that work, that tireless effort that you put into everything, and then you go from that to having to start from square one. And by this time, you know, she was a woman in her 30s, so, you know, she wasn't 20-year-old just starting out. She followed him to America. So I don't think she could let him go. She couldn't let the idea of him go. She couldn't let everything that they'd built up together go. I don't know what she wanted to achieve by doing that. I think some people would say that they still met up in America. I don't know whether that's well documented or not. But it is true that he eventually did have to like sever all ties with her, because there was no other way. I mean, as the president, he couldn't be seen to be behaving like that, and probably didn't want to be behaving like that either. But it's just, for her, she sort of ended up getting married, but not happily, never having any children, never being as happy and fulfilled as that life she had during the war. And it felt to me almost as though when that war ended, part of her life ended. Yeah. A big part of her life ended, and part of her, you know, that chapter closed, and she knew that she'd never be able to match that in her life.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, looking at what she recounts in the book, you know, we've obviously, you know, there is that quote, isn't there, which we, you know, obviously she said, "I was the first British woman to enter defeated Berlin, one of the only three Western women permitted to witness Nazi Germany's formal mm-hmm. surrender." I mean, that is, you know, to go from experiencing something like that to then having almost a chasm of nothing, you know, it's quite incredible. I mean, I'm looking through this book here, and the pictures of her sat next to Churchill. I mean, she's got this look of hauteur upon her face, you know, as if to say, "Look at me, you know, I'm doing really well." And then you've got pictures of her at a play with Ike and her mum as well, and out about driving along, and also, you know, just basically, you know, when they did the surrender, and they did the sign, you know, that signed in with Monty and the rest of them. That picture in itself, I gathered that was quite an infamous picture, wasn't it?
And yeah, I think that at the time, like, she was airbrushed out, or like airbrushed, I suppose. That is what they used to do, airbrushed out of these pictures, which is just an atrocity in itself. And yeah, it's so important that these pictures are now published in this book, and they're, you know, restored to how they should actually look. Because she was the other person in that group.
Yeah.
She was just as important as all of those men in that room, as all the commanders in chief. Without her, I'm not sure what the outcome would have been. I know it's easy to say that. Maybe I'm biased because obviously I've fallen in love with her a bit. Maybe I'm biased because I am a woman as well. But I do believe that so many of these women in that era and at that time would have been overlooked. And how she didn't ever complain about it. She just got on with it. It's just so sort of heartbreaking to read this story and look at all the pictures and listen to her voice so clearly throughout this book, to know that she probably died not a really happy woman after everything that she had done. And the sacrifices that she made, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's very, you know, it speaks of other women who, you know, made such massive efforts during World War II, and then they had to go back to being domesticated, being servants for their partners, their husbands, their families, and they'd got this nourishment from work and from, you know, developing things. And you know, it's getting more common to hear stories of women and what they've done during World War II, which is great. And you know, this is why this book is so important, because you know, she was very self-deprecating, but she was really good on the detail about, you know, the various campaigns. I mean, obviously, you know, she talks about Operation Overlord, which was you know, in the play that you were in Pressure. And there's we were saying before, there's a tiny little paragraph which is the whole nucleus of the play, which is about meteorologists, and when, you know, the operation to the campaign to invade northern France could kick off, you know, and this is down to the weather and us being an island, and that, you know, it was just this amazing point in history. I just thought that was, I mean, it was great that that paragraph was extrapolated from the book and built everything up. But also I like the fact that it developed the relationships between people in that play. And I thought the play was absolutely amazing. I mean, so obviously, you know, you in playing the role of Kay, did you feel that you really got to know her?
Yeah, I mean, David Haig really did draw a very good outline of a character there. Then reading up on stories about her, I got to know her even more through that. Then speaking to the people that actually did know her at the time, and you did get a real insight as to what a sparky personality. Apparently she was one of these people that everybody liked. And not because she was a people pleaser, just because of her spirit. People were drawn to her. People trusted her. People would like to have a laugh with her. It was an incredible privilege to take on the role, because I just felt that it's so nice to be able to continue this person's voice. And perhaps if, you know, by you doing this podcast now about her book and, you know, putting on that play Pressure, which was about the man that had to predict the weather to enable the D-Day landings, another little known, you know, hero of the war effort that nobody really talks about. It's just nice that there are people remembering these people and talking about them and keeping their stories alive. People, well, like Kay, who didn't have children to go on and tell their story, who didn't have that as a legacy. It's just feels very important that she should be remembered, and women like her should be remembered.
Yeah, I've been reading, obviously, Woman's Hour, has been doing, it's been doing over the last few years quite a lot of work or a lot of interviews of women who, for example, worked at Bletchley Park and other jobs of the operations. And, you know, just hearing these women, these terrifying women, because they're so intelligent, talk about their work. And, you know, one that mentioned, I was married to my husband for 50 years and I never mentioned what I did during World War II. I mean, that's absolutely incredible. And, you know, just reading this book just really brings it all home about what, you know, the effort that she made, you know, for our country, which is absolutely incredible. Did you have
I feel like, you know, there is always a lot of emphasis put on, and rightly so, about men coming back from the war and all that they'd seen and what they went through and how they it changed them and how they were, a lot of them didn't know how to live, they had to rebuild their lives, and it really affected their mental health, as we hear about today. We don't hear so much about how it affected the women's mental health, because as you said, women were expected after war to just go back to being like domesticated and just putting the food on the table and doing this, you know. Nobody ever hears that they suffer mentally from it, but they were having to deal with their own tragedies and the mental health of the men around them. And I feel like Kay, during the war, one of the big jobs that she did, as well as driving and, you know, being the secretary, the right-hand man, the driver, everything else, I think helping with the men's mental health was a major part of it. That probably at the time was taken for granted.
Yeah, there was that interesting incident in the book, wasn't there, where one of Eisenhower's men or generals, I think, I can't remember his name, I think it was called, nicknamed Blood and Glory, was it?
Oh, yeah.
He had smacked, it's basically hit two men because they refused to go back onto the front line. And obviously you can see that that was probably, maybe they could, were showing symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. So, you know, that was interesting to get that insight, because as a person reading the book so many years later, you would read it thinking, oh, well, that was because of that. You know, you just think, but at the time they were like, no. Like you said, that British stiff upper lip of, so we're just going to get the heck on with it and just do it. So, but anyway, that was really, there's some really good stories, and her, and she's not dropping names or anything, but I do like the fact that she'll mention certain people, but sometimes in a way where you're reading it thinking, I need to go and Google that or look it up on Wikipedia, because I was reading it thinking, she refers to this person so nonchalantly or sadly or with a sort of spirit of melancholy. What's this person? I've got to look at the, so it was like watching, you know, like I was saying to you, like watching an episode of The Crown where you're like, oh, who's this person? I've got to go and look them up on Wikipedia. So, and then I just thought that was, you know, an insight. And I think that's what's so good about biographies in general, isn't it? It's a chance for you to see, to go on and look for other biographies, which is great.
I think also probably one of the things that the big, you know, like Winston Churchill, Eisenhower, Monty, I think what they did all love about her was the fact that she wasn't fazed by them. She wasn't fazed by, you know, the fact that they were celebrities. She wasn't sort of, she didn't feel scared by them. She didn't feel like I think she was able to be herself, which they might not have been used to. And that, as a result, did she gain their trust very quickly.
Yeah, there's a difference between her and the other, some of the other women in there, with the drivers especially. It was almost like the showing off of a certain general, but she was more keen to team up and work with people. And that's what you really get from this from her book, is that she just could work so effectively in a team, and she could, like you said before, manage people's moods and understand that what people were going through, and understand they were to be left alone and they weren't, you know, talking, you didn't want to talk at all. That's what I do like about her. And I mean, you know, it's just, I mean, obviously going back to their relationship, I mean, you know, there were two biographies written. I think it's important to mention this actually, isn't it? Because we both know that the first biography was published in 1948. Mm-hmm. But the second biography, I think, was written much, much later. And it was kind of ghostwritten, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I think it was when Kay was dying of cancer. But that, I think a lot of people don't agree that was Kay's voice, really. Mm. And so a lot of people disregard what's actually written in that book. Because yes, it was ghostwritten, whereas this one, Eisenhower's My Boss, is written by Kay. So, I mean, we don't know. Nobody really knows for sure, apart from Kay and Eisenhower, maybe a small trusted group that were around at that time. So it's everybody, you know, you can make your own love story up, but I suppose you just have to try and get into the mind of Kay, the author, the voice through this book, and see for yourself. But one thing that can't be denied is the huge mutual respect that they had for each other, regardless of any of the other thing, you know, anything else that went on between them. They were an incredible team and they worked it out together. And I think, you know, the fact is that Eisenhower's wife, Mamie, was aware of Kay. And clearly also knew that she was a good person to have around and a very good influence on him.
Yeah. Yeah, you could really see that. I mean, obviously she mentions Mamie, Eisenhower's wife, in the book, and they seem to be on terms of cordiality, which is...
Yes, definitely. I think she definitely respected Mamie. You know, she knew that you know, she was his wife, and they had children together, and Eisenhower loved his children. I think Kay had huge respect all round for them all. So I think she fell in love with the man and the soul of this man, and whether she ever really wanted to act on that or not, who really knows? So yeah, it's a difficult one. It's a difficult one because I don't think any of us will really ever know the truth there. And it's actually quite annoying because I'd really love to know.
it's a wonderful mystery, isn't it?
We're never going to have the answer to it.
No, I mean, what is good nowadays, I think, is, you know, with media, you get a bit more insights and maybe you have more of the solved story. What I have noticed in the last few years is that we, TV, radio, media, like I've said before, there's a lot more focus on women. There's, you know, obviously there's a TV show, Home Fires, on ITV. Mm. In the Bletchley Circle, which that's been very successful as well. And then obviously they're now gathering archives of women's stories, so, you know, which is really good. It's really good for the later generations to...
Oh yeah, definitely.
So to conclude then, so what I, you know, obviously, you know, both of us, I'd say Laura agrees with me totally, we highly recommend that you read Kay Summersby's biography, Eisenhower. Obviously, to speak a little bit about our biography store collection, we've got 90,000 biographies in our store, and obviously borrowing them couldn't be easier, even though with lockdown we are currently in select and collect. So if you want to borrow the books, you can visit our library app, our online library catalogue, and you can always call or email us. Laura, thank you so much for speaking with me today on the podcast. Thank you so much. It's been absolutely brilliant to get your insights into Kay. And I just want to say on behalf of us, and the library says, we wish you all a very safe and happy 2021.
Thanks very much, Katie.